Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Oh, what's that? It's 2019? Wow. Things are so different now. But welcome to the podcast, the first episode of 2019. The podcast is presented by Scent Crusher, scentcrusher.com. We talk about them all the time, and we got some episodes coming up with Dan Drake himself and maybe some other people from the Scent Crusher crew at ATA next week, coming in hot. Check out Scent Crusher. Be on the lookout for new products. I honestly don't know what's coming that's new. I'm assuming there's new stuff coming. Just stay with it with us. I don't even know what I'm saying right now. Check out scentcrusher.com. The podcast is brought to you by them. We love them. We love that whole family. Super thankful for their partnership. Also, we are brought to you by HHA Sports. Single Pin Nation will be at the HHA booth at ATA. We might do some podcasts at that booth, hanging out with our buddy Scott Bakken, seeing what they got out at HHA this year. We've been shooting the Virtus Rest, the Kingpin, Fixed Position, and Dovetail. We're rocking both of those in our crew. We got to get Mr. Chandler and Ross Bigger on the HHA scheme of things. Ross has his opinions on single pin sights. We've discussed that in the past on why he's wrong and single pin's the best. Check out HHASports.com. Lifetime warranty, and they support our veterans. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you're a communist like Ross and don't want to shoot it. Also brought to you by Elite Archery. We are all part of the Elite family in here. Right. Studio full of Elite shooters. Yep. I haven't hung out with a guy who hasn't shot an Elite in a long time. And that says something about the people I like to hang out with, and it means that they're all good people. I'm kidding, but I like you more if you shoot an Elite. All joking aside, we're not trying to do push-ups everywhere we go. We're just trying to shoot our bows and shoot them accurate. That's a joke. Everybody settle down.
It's like, goddamn.
It's God a joke. Damn. Everyone's butt hurt lately, man.
Pissing all kind of people.
Yeah, everyone's butt hurt in the industry, and listeners are getting – maybe it's just – it's like the more shit you do, the more people get offended. But anyway, super pumped to be in that Elite family, shooting the Rituals. The Ritual 30's out. I'm excited to see what's coming from Elite at ATA next week. God, next week.
I can't believe it's here already.
Dude, I'm stoked. This is the fun time of year where the hunting is all winding down a bit, and then all the new gear comes out and people start getting gear crazy. Gives me anxiety a little bit. But it's fun.
It is fun. It's a blast.
Also brought to you by Big Tine. Big Tine, I can't use the mineral in Illinois, but I can use the buck brunch, food plot seed. But Eric, you use the mineral in the off season for your deer herd.
Deer fucking love that shit.
Yeah, you it's and like Doug crack. Were talking about it. It's like insane how attracted to it they are.
Yeah, we could put out like 6 bags and 2 days later it's gone.
Really?
Jeez. Yeah. They find it within... I've had deer put it out within an hour they're at the pile.
Really?
Of me leaving, yeah.
They like smell the cherry crush,
yeah,
or whatever the
I
scent
guess.
Is.
I don't know.
What can you put it out? You can put it out like the day after bow season, right?
Yep. So it just got to be out 30 days before
season starts.
Yep. And you're supposed to
cover it or get rid of it.
Right. They got so many different rules now and the way they word it in the actual DNR book. So it's kind of, but it used to always be, you know, 30 days out before, and then you have to dig like a foot down of the dirt to get all the mineral out of the ground.
I know a lot of people who use it and they go like the extra mile just to avoid any sort of like misunderstanding or miswording in the book. And that's like even people in like Indiana and other states.
And like most people tell you, like put a piece of plywood down or put a tarp down, you know, throw it on top of that so that mineral does not soak into the dirt. So then you don't have to dig a giant hole there, you know.
Right, yeah. It's awesome stuff. Just I only know that from seeing all the shit you guys send us on your trail cams.
Oh, yeah, it's insane.
But I wish we could use it. Maybe it'll change in Illinois. But if not, I'm fine using the food plot seed and wearing the cool gear. And that's good enough for me. Check out Big Time. We'll be podcasting at their booth the first day of ATA later in the afternoon. Man, I should have my schedule on me. We'll be there like, I think, 3:30 on the first day at ATA. So find us there.
Any awesome. Question mark
behind that. We will be there in the afternoon the first day. I just can't remember what time exactly. I say we just hop into the podcast. That's all. We rambled enough.
I'm Chase Ralston with Rubline Marketing.
This is Jeff Lindsay.
This is Michael Pitt.
Hey, everybody. It's John Dudley from Knock On TV.
Hey, guys. This is Jared Scheffler from Whitetail Adrenaline.
Hi, I'm Taylor Drury from Drury Outdoors.
Hey, this is Nick Munt from Bone Collector.
Hey, this is Melissa Buckman.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
You're listening to the Working Class Bow Hunter. That's right. This is a podcast for Billy Joe Lunchbucket, the working man, just like me and you. My name's Travis T. Bone Turner from the Bone Collector. Thank you for tuning in.
Nobody pushes the envelope like Working Class Bow Hunter.
Hey, this is Jules McQueen, and you are listening to the Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
It's really, really not that good.
Welcome to the Working Class Bowhunter Podcast, episode 263. Kurt is speaking, and I get left out, I think, because we don't ever say our own names or who's talking on the podcast. So Kurt Geyer here, Eric Hammon in studio.
I'm here. I'm back for good now.
For good. Back on first shift.
Yep. I'm drinking beers now. And
New job. That's
I'm
awesome.
Loving it. Yeah.
Congrats, dude.
Hell yes.
You're no longer on that third shift hustle.
Yep, I gave that shit up for good.
Cameron Tank is in the building.
How's it going?
You once called the intern, and I think we're trying to phase you off of that.
Oh,
how's that
feel? Different.
Remember you ruined it a couple episodes ago?
I know, I don't like it.
Pull that mic on your face. There you go.
See? Is that better?
Yeah.
That's closer than two fingers.
You're learning.
Damn it, there I go, intern again.
Ross Bigger in studio.
Yep, that's me.
Austin Chandler's in studio.
What's up, guys?
And on the phone, Clint Casper's calling in from Ohio.
What's going on, fellas?
What's up? It's good to have all you guys here. Clint, I wish you were in studio with us, but this is going to be as good as we can get it.
That's right.
We got some of the three most knowledgeable whitetail hunters that I know. We're missing Clark Cummings. It would be the fourth. But yeah, it's our own little crew we got. So thanks, everyone, for making this happen. Everyone's awfully quiet. It's weird.
Well,
all right.
We'll talk.
We'll hit a veteran shout-out quickly. Our buddy D-Rock from Connecticut sent one in. Mark Summer, Navy SEAL, E6. He traveled the world while raising beautiful and strong daughters and spent his last days in Springfield, Missouri, taking care of his elderly mom while carrying on the American pride and tradition of saluting his country every morning to start the day. He passed away on December 20th. So that D-Rock submitted that. So thank you, Mark, for your service.
Thank you.
D-Rock and Sandra, we are sorry for your loss, and we really appreciate everything he did. That's awesome that he submitted that, D-Rock. So if you want to submit a veteran shout-out, just go to workingclassbowhunter.com, send one in. We appreciate all of you. And I wish we could do more, but just doing the veteran shout-out every episode is just the least we can do. But so thanks everyone out there for your service, and submit a veteran shout out. Well,
hell yeah.
The topic of this episode is late season bow hunting, and we are down to the wire.
We're deep in late season right now.
Deep, man. We're probably a couple weeks late on this episode, in all honesty.
Yeah.
But the reason why I could have just, because we're getting ready to start trade show season next week, I could have just jumped past this and said, we're just not going to do one. But I feel like now with, I don't know how many weeks are left, 3-4 weeks left, depending on where you live.
Say we got 7 days.
Oh, in Iowa you do?
Yeah, we got till the 10th. Yeah.
Okay, in Illinois, I think the 20th.
Yeah.
Some states run a little longer. Some states are kind of in between all that.
34 days in the Buckeye State, bitches.
That's okay. Okay, you got a jaunt. It's. I wanted to do this episode now because I think this will give people that are still hustling out there that are kind of losing hope. Eric's raising his hand. It gives those people a little bit of the rocket boosters to finish out and hit the finish line. And
sure.
That's why you guys are here to talk about that. You guys all have experiences killing late season. Ross just killed a doe yesterday or the day before.
Both.
Two in a row. Austin, you killed a buck last week.
Yep.
And last year, Clint, we were at ATA. You were supposed to go to ATA with us, and you killed a buck while we were at ATA. The first week of January.
With glass in your foot.
Yeah, with a piece of glass in your foot.
January 13th.
Man.
So if that doesn't prove that these boys can kill deer late season, Ross, you've killed, was it last year or the year before you killed
Before. Last year I missed.
But you're on them.
We're on them. Yep.
So, you love late season, don't you?
I do. And really, it's come to that point within the last 4 to 5 years. I'd say 5 years. I've kind of transitioned over to late season.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say a lot of it has to do with work. I'm an electrician. I work on grain bins and all kinds of stuff. And it's finishing out the year, get through the holidays, and approaching the holidays and then into the last part of the year is all my free time to really start hunting hard, and it's been working good. We get a lot of encounters, and I have been able to capitalize on a couple of them and or a few of them, and then I've missed on a few of them. So
it's part of the game.
I will say I'm a little jealous though, because I'm out there in the tree stand freezing my ass off, and he sent a Snapchat sitting in a coop, and he's worried about his windows fogging up. He's wiping it down.
Well, let's cover a few things. So we have. People submitted some questions on Facebook, which we're going to get to, and we'll probably answer a lot of them before we even get to that point. But from my experience, I'm not a huge like late season guy. I've never killed like a big buck real late season. I've killed some does late season. I know from my experience, food is where it's at late season. They're just, they're going to be on that food, especially if it's cold. This year's kind of throwing a stick in everyone's spokes where we're not getting that cold weather that everyone wants for late. You have to have cold weather to make late season hunting effective. Yep. I mean, really, because it makes them, they're slaves of their stomach. They have to go to food.
I think it's kind of like that across the board, across the whole U.S., ain't it? That it's been kind of warm out this whole season.
Yeah. It has been.
Well, it was colder in November in the rut than it is right now.
Yeah, yep. It really was. Well, so I think we need to get a couple things out of the way, because there's going to be a lot of guys that, maybe they don't have grain to hunt over for late season, soybeans or corn. Their property doesn't butt up on field edges maybe. So those guys are going to have like different tactics, and we can dive into maybe what they can do to increase their chances of late season success. Where do you guys think we should start with this whole topic? If we're going to dive in, if there was a book, or if there was a podcast episode called Late Season Bow Hunting 101, what would be the first chapter?
Food.
Okay. Let's start there. Since you spoke first, Austin, let's dive into why is food important late season?
Well, even though the temperatures haven't been as cold as we want here in Illinois, the biggest deer I've seen late season was 53 degrees that night, and he's still coming out, and he's feeding on cut beans. So they still have to get up. They still have to eat. So food is important, whether it's cold or warm. Man, if you've got the time, just get out there, grind it out. Even if it's warm, get out there and see what you see, because literally my best sightings this season, other than the big drop-tine deer I was after, all came after I shot that deer. So after December 12th or 13th, whenever I started hunting hard again, I seen like 5 or 6 good bucks after that.
And to go along with what you said, Austin, that whether it's warm or cold, I'd agree and say no matter what, they need to eat, because they just dogged themselves out over rut. I mean, and to back up this year in particular, we had a great big snow and a whole lot of cold weather at the wrong time.
Fairly early, yes.
Yeah, fairly early, and they were still kind of ruddy, and it wasn't working as good. So even though you sat the food source, you know, you'd think at that point you should be on the field edge. Well, I sat the field edge, and a few would come out, but I didn't see any big ones at all.
I think when we got that snowstorm, and we'll jaunt 10 hours east to where Clint's at, too, because I don't know what you got off that snowstorm, Clint, but I think when that snowstorm hit, there were still a lot of does locked down, or a lot of bucks locked down with does. Yeah. And I think that was kind of like, it was giving the feeling of a late season hunt, when in reality, it was the wrong timing for that type of mindset.
Because we got like 15 inches of snow, didn't we?
Dude, we had a ton of snow.
What'd you get, Clint?
We were probably in that, like, I don't know, it was probably 4 to 6, something like that. I mean, it was like over the course of a few days, but I know, like, here, I mean, the biggest thing I'm seeing is a lot of deer are on green right now, because there's green available that usually isn't available. And I mean, a lot of guys, I'm hearing this, it's not cold, I'm not hunting, it's not, you know, there's not snow. And I mean, just the other day I was driving home, it was like probably 4:15, maybe 20 after 4, and driving down the highway and looked down in across this across the highway in this creek bed about 200 yards away from a major highway, and there's a couple little patches of green grass growing on the side of this creek, and there was probably 150-inch buck feeding on that in broad daylight. I mean, just because that feed is not usually available this time of the year, and I mean, they've had beans and corn all fall, so I mean, some of this green that's actually still green, they haven't had that since early in the year. And, you know, I mean, there's, I don't know, in my opinion, a lot of guys right now have either burnt themselves out or they've let themselves get to the point to where bow hunting isn't fun anymore. And I mean, if I'm writing a late season bow hunting 101 book, my first chapter is going to be get your head right, the mental side of it.
Ooh, because that's a good take on it. That's a good take on it.
Yeah. Like, food is important. If you don't have food, you need to find cover where they're bedding. If you don't, but bottom line is, if you don't have the mental strength right now to say I'm gonna grind it out, I'm gonna sit in a tree, I'm gonna stay after it, you're either A, not gonna hunt very often, or B, when the moment does come, you're gonna forget what you even do because your head's not in it, and you're gonna F up a 25 yard chip shot that you should make. And you know, I mean, hey, it's fourth quarter. I mean, guys have hunted all year, guys have missed, guys have had their target bucks get hit by cars, they've had bucks get killed, they've had bucks get poached.
A lot of doubters.
I mean, I get it. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I mean, I get it. I mean, last year I hunted till the 13th of January. It took me 97 days to kill that buck last year. But, yeah. I mean,
you skipped ATA to go, you're like, hey, boys, I'd love to be there, but.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, it was just, you know, to me, late season is as much about mental as it is anything, because if you're not mentally in the game, it's, well, I'm going to watch this football game tonight. Well, I'm going to stay at home with the old lady and we're going to watch a movie. Well, it's like, man, you got to.
Excuses become more worthy late season.
Oh, yeah. You got to want to be out there, because come June or July, you're going to be kicking yourself in the ass for saying, you know, man, I should have been hunting in January. I should have hunted, you know, blah, blah, blah. Man, I'd do anything to be in a tree stand right now, but yet the whole last month of season, you hunted 3 times. So it's like, you know, you got to think about that stuff right now.
Well, and it makes it so worth it after all the effort you put in. If you do choose to grind it out, that's it, and it comes together. And it may not. It may not come together, but at least you can sit at home in June or July and say, I guarantee you, January 15th, there was not a giant buck sitting over there by my deer stand.
You ruled out every possibility. And, you know, the thing is, you know, bow hunting is going to throw rough seasons at you like that. And I think those are really important for learning. Yeah. I hustled it out to the end last year, and I was rewarded with tagging out early this year. And it just goes in waves. Sometimes it comes a little easier. Sometimes nothing goes right. It's a downhill shitstorm of missing, or you wound one, or you just don't ever see one. Like my dad, he missed one late October, rushed in on him. He just got flustered, missed. Just, it happens to all of us. And we haven't had a real good one on trail camera all season. My dad's just been grinding it out. My dad's been hustling. And sometimes there's nothing you can do. You think you do everything right? That's hunting.
Yeah, yep. You can hunt as hard as you want, but if there's not a big one in there, it's just not going to happen.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the thing.
That's my season right now.
Yeah, Eric's been hustling and just...
been hitting it hard and just haven't been able to... I hit that one October 6th or 7th or whatever. Never found it.
Well, Eric, you know what I think, man? You had a rough mule deer season early in September, but you still got it done. I personally think you're going through that rough patch of a season, and next year, because you push through and put your time and the work in anyway, I just think that it comes in waves like that.
Right.
Uh-huh. You know,
and Saturday and Sunday are my last days to go before season closes, so
yeah,
I'm going to hit her hard this weekend and see if I can't get it done.
Yep. So I like that we have this, because we're right on the border, Western Illinois, Iowa. We got Iowa, Illinois, and Ohio in the studio. So Clint's roughly 10 hours straight beeline east of us. Yep. And it's all kind of – all the same things kind of apply being in the Midwest. And even once you get further to the east, and really, really kind of all over into the south even too, late season, you know. What's cold for them? I've never hunted in the south, but I'm just assuming deer are going to hit food late season. That's what you're going to see. So if we did chapter one, you know, food / get your head right, pretty much, you know, stick with it. I love that, really. I love the pep talk, and I'm glad you brought that up too, Clint, because we've been getting messages the last couple weeks, like, still got a tag in my pocket, I'm burnt out, like, I don't like any advice, what do I do? And then I'm glad we're doing this now. It's a rocket booster to hit the finish line.
No doubt. I've had a ton of those here in the last probably 2 weeks that guys are just like, man, I don't know. You know, what would you do? And I'm like, man, you got to keep hunting. I mean, you know, and here's the thing too. I mean, for the guys that are, you know, the guys that fill the buck tag and they're looking for, you know, a mature buck, you know, 4 or 5 year old or bigger. I mean, hunting big bucks 101, here's the deal. You're not going to kill a giant every year. You're not going to fill your tag every year. And that's just, I mean, that's all part of it. I mean, that's just, I mean, it's, some years it's just not going to happen. And, you know, but go down swinging and say, well, I gave it all I had, but I didn't fill my tag versus, well, I just didn't hunt the last month because I just really wasn't feeling it. And if you don't want to be there, I guess don't be there. But don't let an excuse be the reason why you're not there just because you've talked yourself out of it. I mean, you know, swing for the fences. And, hey, we've all been there. I mean, some years you're just not going to kill a buck in your state. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, that's just, you know, I mean, if it was just about killing a buck and that's it, yeah, I mean, you know, but we've all had opportunities to kill a buck, but when you're hunting specific bucks or you're hunting it's got to be a mature buck or bust type of deal, not every year are you going to get to tag one. That's just part of it.
You went down swinging, though. I mean, that's right.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
That's what makes you, if you go down swinging, man, you put that last effort in, and you know, that's part of the fun of bow hunting. You know, it is a struggle. It is hard. This isn't a casual thing. Like, in my opinion, you should have to hustle after it to take the life of an animal. Yep. If it comes easy, you're just killing.
Yeah,
sure.
You know, I think that if you want to take and respect an animal, it's going to take some effort and time and money and dedication. You're going to have to sacrifice time with your friends and family and not going out partying, even though everyone else in the industry might think all working class bow hunter does is drink. We fucking kill deer first, and then we celebrate with beers. It's, you know, there's priorities here. We're hunters first, and the camaraderie and deer camp comes with drinking beer and having fun with your buddies.
Well, and to how shitty the season has been for me, too. I mean, I've learned so much from this season just because it was a shitty season.
They're the most valuable.
Yep. Oh, yep. For sure.
They're the most valuable seasons, the hard ones.
Yep. Yep.
And I just think people kind of lose sight of that a little bit. Just talking in general, like the how hard late season hunting gets. I've gone through it. I know I've been talking to a lot of people this season that have either wounded a deer and you beat yourself up over it, and it's just part of it.
Because honestly, yeah. If I would have killed that buck October 6th, like, it would have been fucking awesome. But I would have been devastated at the same time because I wouldn't be able to hunt till end of December,
yeah.
You know, until a late muzzleloader.
Dude, what do you? I was bucked out November 4th,
right?
And it's kind of like a weird. It's good though. Like, I'm super thankful for it. I wouldn't change it. But do I want to do that every year? Nah,
hell no.
I'll take it every 4, every 5 years. That'd be cool.
The longer I watch Ross, the more I pay attention to, man, I wish I had a tag in my pocket still when this late season comes on, because I really have got to see how good the hunting gets, you know, mid to late December. It's good. And I've missed out on that a lot in my early bow hunting career. But the longer I do this, the more selective I get early in the season. And the more I like to hang on and keep a tag in my pocket for the late season.
And
for
it's
sure.
crazy how much, or not how much, how many deer, you get velvet pictures of, then they disappear, and then super late season comes along where we're at right now, and then they show up. Random show up. Deer that you haven't seen before that are great big. They're coming out of there. I mean,
coming to food from other properties.
Right now, they're grouping
the
up. There's bachelor groups, and then there's great big groups of does, and there's lots of things going on late season. And if you get on the right food source, talk about the food source. Like Clint said, feeding in a grass patch or. What I've been seeing lately is a cut bean field. You get that green, all the rain that we've had and all the things, and the warm weather has caused the greens to grow up in the in the bean fields.
I hunted an alfalfa field last week, and I had 6 bucks come out, one after each other, right in line.
These does, I've noticed, actually, one of the does I killed in the last 2 days came out straight north of my house in a little cove 300 yards from the house. And I went back in there, and they were coming out. I let them all come out. There was 11 of them. All came out at the same time, and they hit right into that green stuff growing in the bean cut beans.
Do you think that if it was way colder, they'd be on like...
Oh, totally different, yeah.
On the beans and the corn and,
and right
more
now,
grainy, protein-filled.
Right now, I feel pretty grateful because I've got half-ass standing beans. And cut cornfield and winter wheat, and they're all they're all touching together. And when
standing beans, they're the golden ticket.
Yeah, they are. But when the weather is cold, or those deer are grinding and needing that protein, and but I notice after hunting these 3 different sources, I can see all 3 of them from my coop.
From my coop.
But, I can watch all these deer file out, and they're on the greens when it's hot, and they touch the corn for a minute, and that's about it. But
it's a buffet.
The last couple days, Austin and I've hunted, and they've been coming out in the beans, and not so many on the winter wheat. They hit the corn and then touched right into the beans. So they kind of go back and forth.
Okay.
If given those 3 food choices, I would say, I mean, obviously,
diversity is good. Is the moral of the story.
The greens are good.
Give them everything they could want, really.
But
let me throw this at you guys, and whoever wants to answer first, it's if I'm going to ask about late season hunting, and I say, where are you focusing your hunts? Are you morning? Are you midday? Are you afternoon? Like, where is your highest chances of success if you're going to put that time in?
I'm going evening.
Absolutely.
Evening.
Evening, hands down, evening.
Everybody all around evening.
We've got, I don't know about you, Clint, but me and Austin both have several cell cameras running, and they'll come out in the afternoon, they'll feed, and we'll get pictures of them all night long. By daybreak, they're all gone.
I've got some good morning pictures, but it's so much more predictable in the afternoon. You can get such a better bead on what they're doing in the afternoon. And at this point in the game, you really don't want to bust one out in the morning. You know, why roll that dice when he's going to get up and do the same thing almost every evening?
Right. Makes sense.
And it's scary this time of year, too, because everybody is grouped up in big numbers right now. So if you do have a good food source that everybody's hitting, say 10 deer come out, say 15 deer come out, now you got to get out of that blind, and you didn't see your shooter buck, and not blow everybody out of the field. So you got to be real selective on when you make that move. I I am anyway. I'm trying to be as selective as possible on when I make that move and get out there. Because you go blowing deer out of the field every night, getting out of the stand or blind, right. And now you might have ruined it.
Well, plus, so. And you got 10 more pairs of eyes, yep. 10 more yep. noses, you got everything
it's,
else.
It's scary yep. this time of yeah. year when they're all grouped up, because like last night, Austin and I were together, and there was a couple of good bucks we were going to pass, and tons of does.
Too many deer.
We couldn't get a window open. We did, but it was tough. Real tough.
We've got it down to an art form. I'm pulling the window up and handing the bow up to Ross, and then I'm holding the window open while he's shooting the doe. We got a system down.
That's awesome.
That's kind of scary. That's got to be scary.
It was teamwork, definitely.
Well, let's do this. I'm on Facebook now. We did the post yesterday about what we're going to talk about today, and we'll just use the listener submitted questions to dive deeper into this late season
yep.
Puzzle, and then you guys can all answer. Whoever wants to go, just go. It's all up in the air here. Mitchell, any advice on late season tactics with the warmer weather coming would be appreciated. We kind of covered this, but maybe everybody could just give a tip with warmer weather and like how to tackle it. Clint, I'll start with you since you're the guest from out of state.
I'm the privileged guy on the phone. Rather be in studio drinking beer, but it's all right. It's all here. Good. warmer temps, I mean, it's tricky because, I mean, like Austin said, I'm still seeing, you know, good bucks that are out feeding like you in daylight where you'd think it was 10 degrees out with a foot of snow. But I mean, I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, right now there's not a lot of pressure in a lot of these bucks. You know, I mean, they've been hunted, but there's a lot of guys that aren't hunting right now. And I think they're almost back into a calm state. And in my opinion, you can almost compare this weather right now to early season. And I love it when guys tell me, you're an idiot for hunting the first week of season. It's going to be 75 degrees tonight. There ain't no big buck on his feet. Now, wait a minute. I watched them in 80 and 90 degree weather all summer long come out at 5:30, 6 o'clock, 6:30. Now, all of a sudden, because it's first week of bow season, you're telling me they're not going to move in 75 degree weather. Well, the same thing applies right now. I mean, yeah. Would it be better if we have a ton of cold weather and snow to force them to move early every night? Absolutely. But they still got to feed. And right now with this warm weather, instead of just corn and beans to focus on, like I was saying, and like Ross and Austin all said, you've got this, you know, you've got these greens that are out there that usually aren't. So I would say focus right now on some of these food sources that normally aren't around right now, whether it's clover fields that are still super green. Maybe you've got a lot of creek bottoms where there is a bunch of super green neon patches that's growing right now. I mean, I would really try to key in on if you can get in on some green or get in on some food sources that maybe, you know, usually aren't around right now, check those out and just see what's going on. And I'm going to go back to the mental thing too. I mean, step one right now is you can't give up, period. I mean, you absolutely cannot give up. That's bottom line. I don't care if you want to sneak in tight to a bedding area, if you hunt a cut cornfield, if you go hunt green, just hunt somewhere. Be in the woods because it could happen any second and the season's not over. So that's where I'm putting my money is, I mean, you got to be out there, you know, swinging for the fences. I mean, it's in the, you know, ninth inning.
Bingo.
For sure. I think everybody's on board with that.
Yep.
Good luck, Mitchell. Keep us in the loop, man. What happens? Trevor Schmidt, this should be epic. Jake Corngable, late season is the best time to kill a specific big deer, hands down, especially if the weather cooperates. Keyword. Mike Topper, fuck. Not yet. Fuck yeah, now I'm amped. Cody Schaefer, in my state, you can bait your deer. Is that a good way to kill a buck? Will that make them more nocturnal? Or will that make them more nocturnal? So in Illinois and Iowa, we can't do that. But Ohio, you can?
Yep. Yep. Sure can.
So you're the only guy that can talk about this, brother.
So, I mean, here's the deal with the baiting thing. And there's guys that are for it, guys that are against it. Personally, does it work? Absolutely. I've seen it work. I've used bait piles as far as for pictures and to try to figure out bucks. You know, baiting, in my opinion, if done correctly, can be super successful, but it's not as simple as what guys think. There's a lot of states that don't allow baiting, and everyone thinks, oh, Ohio, just throw 120 pounds of corn on the ground, put a camera on it, figure out when a buck's coming in daylight and kill it. It's not that easy. I mean, you know, you almost need to, you know, to number one, you got to make them feel safe. I mean, your location of the bait pile, say it's going to be corn or apples. I mean, it's got to be a location that, number one, they're not afraid to be in during daylight. You know, they're going to be super sketchy coming in. So, I mean, your tree stand setup has got to be, you know, on point. Realistically, if it's me and I said, okay, I'm going to bait. That's just my last ditch effort. I'm baiting. I would hunt the deer coming to the pile. And the reason why is because if you've got, imagine you've got a 250 pound pile of corn and you've got 12 does that come out early and they're on it. And then your buck comes out after that. Okay. Now you're trying to get drawn at 25 yards with all these eyes on you. You're trying to not get busted, not get winded. So, you know, the baiting thing, I would set up 70, 80 yards, you know, on trails, you know, that are going to be leading to that and try to let deer actually slip by you onto it. I think in late season, I mean, you can't get away with any mistakes. So can you turn a buck nocturnal by doing this? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if he doesn't want or think that pile's legit, you know, he might only hit it at night. You may never see it in the daylight. I mean, you know, it's kind of 50-50. I mean, but in the right scenario, I mean, there's guys here in Ohio that have a legit system like I'm talking about, and whether people think it's right or wrong, whatever, it's legal here, they kill a giant every single year off of baiting, whether it's apples, corn, mixture of minerals and corn, whatever. And, I mean, that's just their ticket. I mean, they're good at it, and they make it happen. I mean, you know.
It does make sense, though, if someone served me a hot Casey's pizza and it sat there and I could just eat it at dark and safety, I'd only go there at night and eat that Casey's pizza.
Well, and that's the thing, too, is with warmer weather like this, seeing as how it's not going to be like supernatural, I'm going to say with the warmer temp, it's going to be harder
on you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be harder.
Because he's going to lay up, it hits dark, he's like, cool, man, I'm going to go eat that Casey's pizza. Yeah, and he just strolls his fat ass over there and beds down and eats it while he's bedding.
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, the thing is, too, is a lot of guys, I think where a lot of guys mess up on the baiting is they put a pile out and they put one stand and they hunt that tree. No matter the wind, no matter with the thermals, it doesn't matter. I'm hunting this stand. I'm hunting over this corn. I mean, dude, you get one mature doe to bust you one time over that pile. Every time she comes in, guarantee you, every time from that night on when she comes in, she will be watching that tree and watching that spot because she knows that corn pile was a – I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, it – you know, during this late season phase, I mean, you really got to be touchy if you're going to mess with something like that. Can it work? Absolutely. Like I said, I mean, I've got guys, I've got buddies, I know people that do, that is how they kill big bucks every year. That's the only way they do it. I mean, that's their game. Mm-hmm. But it's a very intricate system. And I mean, this year with the warm weather, man, I don't know. I mean,
let me ask you this, Clint. Since you can bait in your state, are you... If they left it up to you, hey, Clint, we're going to make this law for 2019, your pick. Keep baiting or take it away?
Take it away.
I thought that I would get that answer, but I had to ask.
Yep, take it away. And not because I'm against baiting, but what I don't like is a lot of people don't understand this. Baiting with corn constant is not good for a deer. Deer have a hard time in general digesting corn. A lot of people don't realize this, but and especially okay,
well, if we ate nothing but corn, our shit would look the same as a deer's.
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing with it is from like a nutritional standpoint, corn, when you start feeding it, let's say season opens up September 30th. A lot of guys in this state, on September 1st, they'll start dumping 300 pounds of corn every week. They will condition a buck in early season to hit this corn in daylight before he heads off to a bigger field somewhere. Like, so, you know, they'll find a good transition zone. They're dumping corn once a week, cameras over it. The minute that they kill their buck, they're done baiting. No more corn. So now all these deer who have now been eating corn for a month, their stomach, they no longer get corn. Like let's say there's no corn in that area. So now no longer do they get that. Same thing in late season. These deer are relying on a guy's corn pile. For 3 months, he's been baiting. Finally, he kills his buck on January 13th and says, okay, I killed my buck. That's it. I'm done. Now there's no more corn. And these deer have, like, their stomachs have been enslaved to this. It's just not good for them.
It's like eating nutritional. It's like eating steak and then switching to vegetarian the next day.
Yeah, I mean,
I never thought of it that way.
I haven't either.
No, it's not. And if you look up online, like, I don't know who the heck was it. I want to say it was the late great Charles Alzheimer. He did a couple stories about it, and I know. I want to say Gary Clancy's done some stuff. I mean, there's been a couple big time whitetail writers that have done some research studies and done a bunch of stuff on corn and baiting. And I mean, like I said, for the guy that baits you around and dumps some corn, dumps mineral, does all that, hey, I'm cool with that. Like, I mean, all right, but I just hate to see guys that just dump a pile for a month and then the minute they kill their buck, that's it, they're done. And like, you condition these deer to eat corn, and then you totally take it away from them. And like I said, corn is not that great digestively for a whitetail anyway. It's just not. So I mean, so for me, you know, I mean, it's, and here's the other side. The other side is, let's say Kurt owns 20 acres and he's got five neighbors around him. If all five of his neighbors are baiting, guess what? If Kurt doesn't bait, Kurt's not going to see any deer.
Yeah.
Because every deer will be heading to or going to that corn, whether it's before daylight or before it's dark, or at some point they're going to be heading to that corn. So now if you're not riding a fence line and hunting a property edge, you're in trouble. Mm-hmm. Because if you're the only guy who's not baiting, I mean, I've actually quit hunting some farms because of this. Because literally the neighbors were baiting so hardcore that it was either I had to start doing that myself, which I wasn't going to do, or flip side, I had to just basically throw the towel in there and move elsewhere. And I mean, mm-hmm. for me, it's, you know, I mean, it came down to that decision. And I mean, it's hard to get into a baiting war. I got a really good buddy who's a big time buck killer. I mean, he's probably got 20, 25 Pope and Youngs on the wall with his bow, and he's running into this right now. I mean, he's got some dynamite farms, but dude, it is, they're like, he told me that like a month ago, from one of his tree stands, he could see three different properties with his binoculars. He counted six different corn piles from his tree stand on neighboring
properties. That's absurd,
properties.
Man.
Six different corn piles. Now, I'm how thankful are you for supposed Illinois. To? Yeah. I mean, how are you supposed to compete with that? I mean, if you're not baiting, why would any deer be coming? I mean, you know, this time of the year, especially if you're baiting, I mean, it's.
Dude, if I was a farmer in Ohio, how can you have my sieve and chaffer shut all the way down, and I'd be just mowing over corn.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd just be spreading corn out of the back. Just, I'd have the rock trap open, just dropping cobs.
I'm not against it or for. I mean, hey, whatever, man. I mean, you know, it's just like the crossbow compound thing. Hey, if you want to use crossbow, great. Whatever.
We can.
You know, I'm cool.
In Illinois, Austin, you probably know this more than anyone here. You can't mow corn in Illinois, can you?
As far as I know, you can, but I...
Okay, maybe as if you have it in the CR... Oh, I don't know the rules.
So it's really weird. It breaks it out to waterfowl. You can't mow corn for waterfowl.
Oh, really?
I looked it up because we had one podcast that we talked about it, and yeah, it was...
It's because of what the waterfowl will...
Well, I mean, it's baiting for waterfowl. Which, I don't know. It's weird.
Yep.
It's the DNR.
I think there's something like that in Iowa, too. If you leave upstanding corn, you can't mow it down.
Really?
Or standing beans. Yeah, you can't go in there with like a mower, like a bat wing or something, and mow it down.
In Ohio, you could, because what the hell, right? You can bait.
Well, yeah,
you
bait
absolutely. There's lots of guys that leave standing beans and corn, and come January 1st, they mow half of it down. Oh, yeah. I mean, they are planting it specifically for deer.
You know what I've also heard guys do? I knew a farmer. I work for deer. It was a guy that his place we were working at. I have nothing to do with hunting this property, just to be clear. I'm there talking to him. I seen some blinds they had set up, and they had this little couple acre corn plot, you know, surrounded by woods. Like, oh yeah, we just drive over it with the tractor at the end of the year, and them deer love that corn when it's laid down like that. They're not. I'm sure what they're doing. Maybe it's illegal. I don't know.
They're not mowing it. Yeah, I would say I don't understand.
So they just drive over it.
I mean, you have the food plot, but then you can't just mow it. I mean, the food's still there.
Yeah, it's
not adding.
And with standing corn, I mean, it's on the stalk or it's on the ground. What the hell's the difference?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Which I don't know if there's a gray area where, like, well, how do we know if you don't just dump bags of corn then in your mowed corn?
Yeah. Right. It's a debate. Yeah. It's a debate not to get into right now, I guess.
It's such a gray area that, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how it is in Ohio. Like I said, I'm not for it or against it because, I mean, I've used them. I've hunted on them. I mean, I've tried to play that game just to see. And honestly, I think a lot of guys don't realize this, but corn piles, like, in your head, it makes sense. Like, oh, this will be easy. I just dump corn. A big buck shows up, I kill it. But honestly, in my opinion, and this is just me, I think you educate and I think you run more bucks off by baiting. The typical mainstream way of just dumping a pile of corn on the edge of a field and putting a stand and a camera over it, I think you educate more mature deer, does and bucks than you're ever going to actually shoot or potentially have chances at.
Well, now, because if that's your tactic, you're going walking around like a jackass on everything and touching everything and going in on whatever wind and...
You know, I mean, let's just get off
the bait thing. I'm kind of over this whole bait. It bums me out a little, but so thank you, Cody Schaefer, for starting that debacle. Appreciate your question, though, man. Good luck to you. I love that Tom Self says, oh, man, this ought to be interesting and jam-packed, and Clint responds, drop your red panties and hold on to your hat. It's about to get wild.
straight out of Conor McGregor's mouth.
Yeah, yeah. Bust out the red panties. We've made it.
We did it.
Shout out to Greg Godfrey. He's the man behind Tethered. One of the men behind Tethered saddle hunting. Big shout out to them. I want to hear about Austin Chandler's big bucks, which we're going to talk about the old saddle thing here. I do want to get to that. So don't let me jump past that.
Okay.
Because we have your last big buck in studio right now. Troy Naylor says, I'm dying for some cold weather. It's awfully warm in Ohio this year, which... Everyone is going to agree. Here's a question that's not late season hunting. Maybe we can just really just touch on this kind of quick without diving real, real deep. Kelly Dewey asks a question. What's the furthest shot you feel comfortable taking that big bucks from a tree stand? We'll start. Austin, we'll start with you.
Longest shot I would ever take. If he's feeding, there's a 10-mile-an-hour wind to cover up noise and everything, and nobody's alert, I'd probably try a 70-yard shot on something that was feeding and the conditions were right. I'd be comfortable with a 70-yard shot on a deer.
Assuming you put in your practice time for the listeners, just to cover that. But, okay. Ross?
My longest is 55. 55. I laugh as I say that because I feel like I could do better. I practice longer.
He's the long bomb king. This guy can shoot at 80 all day long.
Ross is too.
I practice at 80. I should practice at 100, but I practice at 80 and feel it's totally different, man. When you're sitting, I don't care if you're sitting in a chair.
Can I cut you off real quick?
Cut me off.
I'm sorry. I had to be clear for our listeners out there. We shoot our bows a lot. Mm-hmm. And
Yep.
We don't go out and try an 80-yard shot because we think we can just try it and it's no big deal. Right. We know the consequences of long-range shooting. Yep. They don't happen often, but they can happen if you put your homework in. We practice.
Yep.
I just had to make that clear.
And so I practice really hard at 80, and I have my two farthest shots. I killed a buck and I killed a doe at 55, and both of them felt good when I shot them. Everything went like I wanted it to.
Mm-hmm.
Now 55 is my longest. I have a buddy that his longest kill was 155.
Holy
and
shit.
I thought, you know,
with a bow?
With a bow.
They practice at 150.
These guys have won world records. So they're archery kings.
It's insane.
But yeah, longest kill 155. So but now we're gonna fire up some guys.
Yeah,
and
some unethical questions.
I'm not gonna worry about any of that because obviously the target can move, things can happen.
There's guys that have been in the mainstream industry, been kicked off Under Armour, been kicked off Realtree, for making shots. I'm not gonna say their names, but
so
I know.
I'm just gonna leave that little thing I said out there and you can think about it for a second, but don't ask any questions. So anyway, 155 is a long bomb. I probably wouldn't do that myself, but
you know how many guys I know that hunt out west that kill antelope at 100+ yards?
Yeah,
it's more than people admit
all day long.
Yep.
And those guys practice. You don't do that shit without practicing.
No, that's not an accident.
No, but it's not an accident.
Yeah. To go back to
you're not tripping to a 100-yard shot.
No.
But to go back to his question on what range would you feel comfortable? Well, I can tell you shooting flat-footed, shooting at a target is totally different than sitting in a blind in a chair shooting at that range. So you got to practice every different form. Yep. Shoot on one knee, shoot on two knees.
Yeah,
I don't care. Shoot off your belly, whatever you got to do. Shoot off your back. I mean, you do some.
However you're going to hunt.
However you're going to hunt or whatever situation you're going to be in. So lately, we've been sitting in chairs in a blind.
Okay, this question turned out more fun than I want. So we're going to do everyone in the studio. Clint, what's your furthest shot you would take?
Man, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's going to have to depend. I mean, there's a lot of factors, just like, you know, Ross and Austin said. I mean, I shoot at 120 to 130 all year to make 70 and 80 yard shots simpler for me because I hunt so much out west. Longest whitetail I've shot is, memory serves me right, 76, 77 yards. I've killed quite a few at that 50 to 60 range. So, I mean, but conditions were right. I had no wind. I had deer feeding. I didn't have many deer there. You know, no one knew. I mean, so, you know, yeah, I mean, it just goes back to what you're comfortable with. And just real quick to touch on shooting in general. I mean, you know, it's all got to be within where you're confident. Like, you know, I mean, this might come off like cocky to some, but it's just, this is just my mentality. Like, when I draw in a bow back, if my dial goes to 110, if you're within 110 and I draw that bow back, I'm killing you. I mean, that's not.
You got to be that way.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, I mean, you can look at it, a linebacker in football, a shooting guard in the NBA, whatever. I mean, a shooter is a shooter. I mean, and, you know, your middle linebacker, there's no one in the world you can't tackle. So, I mean, for me, it's just a confidence thing of, you know I can make those shots. If I can dial tape to it, I'm going to kill you. I mean, it's just...
That feeling honestly changes the game for everything.
You have to be confident in anything you do, even in life. If you're not confident and sure of yourself,
you're gonna fall on your face.
You can't be asking questions. You got to be.
I'll touch on this shot thing, and we're spending more time on it than I wanted to, so I'll go quick. Up until last year, my furthest shot was 35 yards, and I've been bow hunting a long time. This year, I killed a doe at 60 yards.
Nice.
I don't get those shots often. I don't take them often. But it felt right, and I felt confident because I practiced my fucking ass off this summer for elk hunting.
Yep.
For whitetail and elk, but in my head, I'm going to kill an elk, and if he's out at 55 yards, I'm smoking.
Yeah, you got to be good at 80 yards when you go out west.
Yeah,
you got to be good.
I got advice from my buddies. I'm going to try and go antelope hunting this year, and they said, if you can't shoot 80 yards accurately, you're at a huge disadvantage already. And I'm okay, I'm going to try and shoot 120, 130 yards this summer. So 80 feels like 30 yards.
I went 2 for 2 in Montana the last 2 years, and I'll leave you with this. My closest of the two
was 86.
Jesus
Christ. So.
Okay, well, let's move on from that. Connor Wakefield asks, big shout out, Connor. Check out two episodes ago, 261 he was on.
Yeah, good episode. Good episode.
Some people wrote in and said that was the best episode we've ever recorded. Shout out to everyone on that episode, everyone we mentioned on that episode. Podcast hunting is where it's at, baby.
Right.
He said, basically, non-prevailing winds for your area. I'm assuming he wants to know how you would tackle that.
Well, Austin and I, just talking on last night, Austin and I sitting in the blind, 40 deer. I think there's 40 deer in the field, and which is it's just, this field's stupid. I mean, there's always deer in there, but... We said when we got set down, man, we're going to be fine as long as nobody gets right in that little pocket and they will catch us. If they catch us, we're screwed the whole night. And actually, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 different deer, 3 of them bucks, busted us, but not busted us. We had that blind sealed up tight and they smelled something and every one of them licked their nose, stared right at the blind, couldn't figure it out, went back to feeding. So, if you don't have a prevailing wind, if you can seal your scent up super tight, sometimes you can get away with stuff. We shouldn't have got away with what we did, but we did last night, and I ended up shooting a doe to clear the field.
What if a guy has no chance of beating that wind? There's not
stay
a,
away from it.
You just can't do nothing about
you
it.
Just, no, just use, reposition. Hey,
use terrain features. Use terrain features to your advantage.
It's a good advice. Yep. That is good advice because... That you can work around. And I'm assuming Connor's on some sort of public piece, which is why he's asking.
Mm-hmm.
It does kind of paint you back into a corner.
It does.
A little bit. And it's, I mean, what do you do? You know, scent control's your best friend no matter what you're doing.
And access and exit, I mean, they count big time this time of year. It gets really tough.
Ever since I changed the way I look at entry and exit, my buck sightings have gone up dramatically. It really has. That's a tough question. What do you think, Clint, if you just don't have the right winds for your area?
I mean, late season, you know, deer are so sketchy from just, I mean, you know, they've been hunted archery, they've been hunted in the rut, they've been hunting in gun season, they've hunted in muzzleloader season, rifle season. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, you've got to be... There's a fine line between pushing the envelope and getting to the point where you're just being stupid and completely blowing your chances. But I do think a lot of guys, though, forget thermals and prevailing winds. Yeah. I mean, like, okay, like, you know, the wind might be coming. Okay. It's an evening hunt. So your thermals are going to be, you know, are going to be falling. So let's say a wind out of the north, but you're hunting at the top of a ravine or something. With those thermals, dude, I mean, chances are, I'll guarantee you're not going to have your scent because of your thermals blowing south with that north wind. I just guarantee it. So, I mean, I think if you use terrain to your advantage a little bit, you can kind of find some quirks maybe by using those thermals to your advantage to where, okay, yeah, I get it. Weather Channel says it's a south wind, but with thermals, especially on a night when there's not a ton of wind, I mean, you know, man, ever since I started hunting out west where thermals are like everything, thermals are so important. And I've taken that back to my whitetail stuff. And man, there's a lot of times now that I hunt winds that I never would have hunted because I'm like, okay, I'm going into this spot judging off of what thermals are going to be doing on an evening hunt and the way the terrain lays, I should be able to make this work. And man, 9 times out of 10, I mean, usually it's not the same wind that they're calling for and you're actually okay. But if you would have went just off of what Weather Channel was saying, I would have never went in there. So, I mean, I would say, you know, definitely do a little bit of checking around while you're in there on some different spots and kind of play them thermals a little bit. I mean, I realize the dominant winds, you know, if you got a 15-mile-per-hour wind, yeah, okay. Realistically, yeah, I mean, there's, you know, 15, 20-mile-an-hour. If it says it's out of the north, it's pretty much out of the north. I mean, there's not a whole lot you can do with that. But on nights where it's not real windy, man, them thermals, I mean, they can be real shifty where it might be out of the east or, you know, whatever, and it's calling for north, but thermals out of the east are fine. So
Yeah.
Well, and going back on that, like, weather app channel and stuff where the wind's always wrong, like, the best thing I ever did was I bought a weather station for my house, and that, I mean, I look at that thing every morning to see the wind direction. It'll give you a barometric pressure. It gives you everything right on contact. You don't have to worry about an app being wrong or nothing.
But we're getting fairly deep on the strategy here with digging in deep, going in and hunting a wind and thermals and everything, but it really does play in. I mean, you got to watch that stuff if you want to be successful, especially if you're on a big buck that you're confident on. And that, I don't know. Austin, I would say at that point, most of us probably don't have a deer stand in that spot that you need to be in according to the terrain and the thermals and everything. And Austin can, he just hunted and killed this big buck that's in the studio tonight out of a saddle. And I think saddle is probably your go-to on these run and gun, get in the tree. Sorry, hang and bang.
Ross genuinely felt bad for saying run and gun.
I really did.
I saw it on your face.
It redefines hang and bang.
I do want to get into that in some detail with you guys here because you guys are all big buck killers. Let's someone asked about deer drives. Let's hit these, and then I want to touch into we can close out whatever we haven't covered.
Yep.
And then I want to talk about your latest buck, Austin, and saddle hunting because it's an exciting topic and it's a controversial topic, but it's an effective form of hunting.
Yep.
Timothy Stancliffe, Timothy, have you ever attempted a drive with your bow? I know it sounds silly, but every chance I've had with a flintlock, I feel like I would have an even better chance with a bow in late season drives. Personally, I have never done it with a bow. I haven't done a deer drive since I was a little guy and like was just started and like, oh, I don't know what to do now. The deer aren't moved. Let's drive them. And so I didn't understand how deer moved. I didn't understand like what I understand now.
I tell you what, if you want to be good with a bow on a deer drive, let the combine be your deer driver. And be good with the neighbors, and if the neighbors call you and say there's a big buck in this last eight rows and we're finishing out the field, I've got a couple of buddies that have killed some pretty good bucks just off the end rows of a cornfield.
That is the best answer to that question that I think I didn't know I wanted to hear that, but when I heard it, it sounded right.
Well, look at Doug's mom. She was in the auger cart, and her dad was combining. She's like, hey, there's a big buck in here. Get ready. And she's seen him come out, got out of the tractor, and shot him.
Really?
Yeah. Man.
Yikes.
Savage.
Yeah. Savage. Damn. Doug's hunting right now. Hopefully, I mean, they're not harvesting corn.
Well, hopefully not. It's like two and a half hours past dark.
I think he's done now.
It's a full moon. It's a full moon. You don't need to worry.
Clint, what's your, have you ever, a deer drive guy? No? Not a deer drive guy?
I mean, growing up and still in shotgun season, I mean, that's all my family does because, I mean, I'm the only bow hunter. So, I mean, I've grown up doing deer drives. I've grown up being part of, you know, orchestrated deer drives, but with a plan and a purpose. I mean, you know, it's not just run through the woods banging pots and pans. I mean, it's a slow, methodical, you know, it's a slow, methodical push, you know, I mean, and you're trying to get deer up and get deer to move, but you're not trying to make it to where they're running for their lives.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I know some guys personally that, I mean, they've killed some booners off of 2 and 3 man drives and basically going into a thicket where there's a saddle or there's a funnel or there's some type of pinch point that these deer are going to use as an escape route. They put the shooter there and then two guys come in from the back with, you know, the winds at their back. So the deer are winding them as they're coming in. And it's just a very slow, methodical walk.
It's more of a pressure push at that point.
Oh yeah.
It's a light pressure push.
Yep. Slow. And I mean, you know,
hey, did we just make another term in the industry, a pressure push?
Pressure push.
They're no longer deer drives, they're pressure pushes.
A pressure push, yeah. And I mean, you know, like I said,
a t-shirt,
I mean,
in the way. In the making.
Pressure pushing.
Pressure pushing. But yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, I've actually I went on a couple with some of my buddies back. I mean, it's been probably 8-9 years ago. We had some doe tags,
And we did them just for fun. And, I mean, I killed two does doing this. I mean, just like, you know, I mean, one was at like 15 yards standing there looking back at the drivers. The other doe was at like 30 yards, and she was just slowly walking and kind of like trying to pick her way, like figure out, okay, you know, there's guys in the woods. What do I want to do? Where do I want to go? I mean, and like I said, I mean, you know, I've never killed a big buck doing it, but I've never actually tried to kill a big buck doing it. I've just done it with doe tags. But I know guys that legit have killed. I mean, I know a guy that's got a 183 on the wall.
Yep.
That legit was from a – they knew he was in this woodlot. He was not moving. It was last week of season. They said, screw it. Let's get five guys together and let's try to get him killed. And sure as shit, the guy that was on the saddle – I mean, he made a beeline for that saddle. He shot him at like 40 yards standing there looking back at the driver. I mean, it worked out picture perfect. I mean, yep. You know,
it's crazy.
Not saying that I'm going to go round up 10 guys and that's how I'm going to start bow hunting big deer, but it is a last ditch effort. And here's the deal. It's fun. I mean, it's something different. Yeah, like,
you're right.
I think
there's something traditional about a deer driver, yeah, deep in the heritage of deer hunting.
Because I mean, let's be honest.
Pressure pushes.
And when you have all your relatives, it's your tradition. It's
a camaraderie thing. Yeah, it's the ritual, man. Honor it.
Way back with the Indians, I mean, they were doing this shit. So, I mean, it is kind of cool.
Just push them off cliffs. Fuck it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. We'll just eat the tongue. It's fine.
It worked on buffalo. We can do it on whitetails.
I'm kidding. I don't want all the Native Americans writing in all mad at me. Yeah. Just heard that's what that did. I don't know.
You covered yourself just right there. Very good.
If you take anything we say like that in that term serious, man, you got to find another podcast.
Yeah.
Now the push is an interesting topic. Is there anything that we haven't covered that's super effective for late season? Are we good there?
Well, we'll get into it when I talk about my buck, but there are still some young does coming into the last cycle. It's almost like the third cycle. So
Ross talked about this. Was it last year or the year before?
Ross something like that.
Ross is dancing over there.
No, I was just...
You talked about the other cycles of the rut.
So phase one. So however you want to... Anyways, finish, Austin.
No, we'll get into it. But basically, when I shot this buck, there were four or five bucks on a couple does, and the one doe was hot. This buck was with her, and when she came out to feed, he decided to come around and touch up a couple scrapes, and actually shot this deer on a scrape like December 28th or 9th. So
damn.
So
dude.
Scrapes. Yeah. What he's saying, scrapes are hot right now, and
can be
only
hot.
Only hunt scrapes.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Only hunt scrapes.
No.
Forget the food.
Everything we say is the final word.
If you've got a scrape that's been hit, you better be on it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yep.
Yeah, I do. I'd agree with that. If you've got scrapes opened up right now, there's a reason why they're opened up. You better be there.
So what I want, let's transition now. I feel like we covered all that. A lot of that has all been discussed before.
This podcast.
On this podcast and almost every other podcast, but we're giving you like different insight. There's one question I wanted to bring up and then kind of answer it all at the same time, because I know I'm going to get a message after this episode goes out if I don't bring this up and then give an answer to it.
Yep.
Is the guys that don't have the opportunity to hunt a grain plot or any sort of food plot that are hunting like big timber edges. And I'm sure right now with the warmer weather, if there's acorns, they're going to eat acorns. They're going to feed on greens in the timber, that sort of thing. I think if once it gets colder for those guys, and maybe you guys can correct me, or maybe I'm fucking way wrong, I don't know. This is what I would do personally. If it's cold, cold weather, I grew up on a property that didn't have food on it, but the neighbors had food. When the weather gets cold like this, if I'm hustling out to late season, I'm getting as close as I can to that food, but trying to intercept them. And if you got to go in the afternoon, you're scared about bumping them, you just do the best you can with the wind and the terrain features and sit in to try and intercept them getting up to get curious from bed to food.
Yep.
It's all you can do at that point.
That's right.
And, you know, they'll mill around. Mm-hmm. Deer eat bark, tree bark and shit, and people don't know they do that, but they do it. And you can get them doing that shit, too, on their way back to bed, because they're not, like Clint said earlier, they're not going to eat just grain. They're feeding on other stuff, too, in that mix as well.
Right. Right. And I talked earlier, go ahead, Clint.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like I talked earlier, I have beans, cut corn, and winter wheat, mm-hmm. and some a lot of guys don't have that. I don't usually have that, but I do this year. So I've been able to watch these deer and watch them according to the temperature and lots of things. So I've learned a lot this year watching them. But say somebody only has cut corn. I'm going to go back to what you said, Kurt. And, you know, if cut corn's the only grain that they have to eat, they're going to stay on the cut corn. I mean, mm-hmm. Food is food to them right now. If they had a smorgasbord, they could pick and clean through yeah. what they want, but they don't always get that. So, yeah, try to get in there and intercept them. So
mm-hmm. you got to adapt and overcome, essentially.
Yeah. I'd say last year when I was hunting public, I mean, I was hunting shelter yeah. areas where it's a drop-off or heavy woods or whatever. I mean, if it's blocking that cold wind, I mean, I know it's not cold right now, but who knows what
normally it would have been.
Yeah. Who knows what will happen next week. I mean
that's really on a basic shelter. Level, like on like a just on the outside, that's, you know, using terrain features to your, yeah. to your advantage. Because mm-hmm. terrain features are, they could be a funnel, could be the deer, it's forcing the deer down to a certain area, which is a yep. funnel. But, you know, cover, safety. That's why south-facing slopes is where you find sheds.
Yep.
You know, it all adds up. That's where the sun's hitting most of the day. That's where they're getting their warmth. That's where they're kind of re-energizing. They're resting up there. Then they're hit. Wherever they're going from there to wherever the food is in between there is where you want to be.
Yep.
Well, and touching on south-facing slopes, it's funny you brought that up because that's what I was going to say. If there's some properties that I've hunted and still do hunt where there's no ag for 5-6 miles, and I mean – south facing slopes, a lot of guys forget, you know, it gets all the sun. Yep. And guys will say right now, well, you know, yeah, but right now it's warm. I understand it's warm, but that south facing slope gets more sun. Right now you've got green briars that's starting to get little baby buds on them because of this warmth. You're going to have more green on that south facing slope because the sun hits it longer. And two, yep. it's a big old mature buck that's been run down. It's nice for him to take a big old nap on a south-facing slope and have that sun hit him all day long just because it just feels good on his body to begin with. And, you know, going back to the shed thing, I mean, I'm sure you guys will probably attest to this too because I know you guys are, you know, into finding big sheds like I am. Every year where I find a lot of my, you know, a lot of my farms, a lot of my spots where I find the majority of my sheds, that is where my late season hunting always will be good every single year from, mm-hmm. you know, from year to year. And everyone says, oh yeah, but it's because of food. It's because of this or because of that. 9 times out of 10, it has nothing to do with food.
Yeah.
It's because of there's a shitload of south facing slope. There's good thickets. There's creeks and there's water for them to get to. There's terrain features that are getting them down out of the wind, down out of the weather, down out of the snow. I mean, there's more to it. Food is important, absolutely, but there's more to that science than just feed. And for guys that can't hunt feed or they can't even get close to feed, you know, if I had one tip, I'm going to tell you, go to a south-facing slope and start scouting there and see what you run into. I guarantee you're going to find bed. You're going to find a bunch of deer sign in general, and, mm-hmm. and that's where – I would focus, you know, my attention would be trying to catch deer going to and from bedding areas on south facing slopes. If there's no, you know, if you're a guy that there's no ag, there's no crops around, you're just hunting big woods, south facing slopes. I mean, that's where it's at.
And most of those bigger mature deer, what I've seen in the past, 90% of the time they stay in their safe zone. So
yeah.
They're,
yeah, for sure.
They're not going to leave and go a mile and a half or 3 miles away just to look for food. They're just yep. going to be happy with what they got and yeah. stay in their safe zone.
Mm-hmm. Survival, so, man.
Yeah, I mean, so a south-facing hillside, like Clint said, and that's their area. If they don't have any food, they're just going to sit there and be like, well, shit, can't wait till next year. I mean, and drop their sheds, and you pick them up, and they're staying in their area. I mean, I don't know. For me, I'm gonna stick to my guns and say there's not a chance you're going to get a mature deer, I don't care what size he is, to leave and go somewhere he's not used to just because there's a food plot a mile and a half away. Yeah. I mean, he hits his boundaries, and you may hit those, you may get pictures of him on his boundaries, and he disappears. And sometimes in the full rut, they maybe go right outside.
The only thing that's pulling them that way is pussy.
But they're not going far. I mean, they may range outside of that zone, but I'm gonna go right back to saying that they know where their home is.
Right.
And it's crazy that neighbors on both sides of me will, I'm right in the middle, say I get pictures on my one half that there are a certain deer coming on that one half. I never get pictures of the other half on that side. So I'm going to say the safe zone, the home zone for these big bucks, I'm a big believer in that. So
mm-hmm. Yeah. I think everybody would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So I think we beat that in. I think we covered everything that needs to be covered. If we missed something, let us know. One thing I want to transition to now is saddle hunting, because it applies directly to this buck that's on the studio table right now. Awesome buck. Congrats, Austin.
Thank you. Appreciate
you. You closed the season out in very classy fashion. Just congrats. You've had a hell of a season.
I appreciate it, man. It has. It's been a long, tough season, probably my longest season, but I got rewarded in the end, so yeah. I'm super, super grateful for that.
Hey, you don't trip into them, man. I don't know if anyone ever told you that, but
I definitely didn't on this one, but didn't have to put the effort in on this deer as much as the first one I killed this year. But this deer,
I think though, even though you say that, you just weren't after this deer in particular. You still put all that effort,
right?
You know,
I wasn't targeting this deer and didn't have as many hours on this deer as I did on my first one. But man, I'd hunted a lot, and I was hunting that big deer early, that big drop time deer early, and I was hunting other farms, and I just wasn't getting pictures, and I wasn't seeing the caliber of deer that I was after. So when this deer did show up on my new farm, I was pretty excited, and didn't get to get a lot of pictures of him. You want me to just go ahead and go into the story on him? Or
yeah, you can.
I do want to
talk about the saddle stuff. That's where I'm wanting to go. But yeah, I do. Yeah, because we had a ton of people messaging. I hope Austin's going to be back in to tell the story on this buck.
I won't make it an hour-long story. We'll condense it up.
You tell it how you got to tell
honestly,
it,
honestly, it's not going to be as long of a story.
Hey, you know what's cool? This is our show. We can record for as long as we want to.
That's right.
Well, this deer, I'd only gotten 3 pictures of him all season. So he wasn't like a regular on the farm. Like November 13th was the first picture I got of him. And as soon as I seen him, like, man, that's like my first instinct was that's a shooter. Like I would shoot that deer. So I got excited, but he never showed up again. It was November 13th was the first picture, and it was like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It was actually the same day I had a really good encounter with the drop tine deer, like a mile north of this farm.
Okay.
So I was close to the same area, but it was December 15th.
Oh, damn, over a month.
A month later before I got another picture of this deer. And when I got that picture, I'm like, all right, we're transitioning to that late season. If I'm getting a picture of him, he's probably staying pretty close to my food that I've got, this cut cornfield right here. Yeah. So I'm going to go ahead and get a cell camera going. And there was a fresh scrape that had just been freshened up that day. So I'm like, maybe he's the culprit. You know, he could be the one using it. So it took a little while. It was, December 28th, I think's the day that I shot him. And that was the first cell camera picture that I got of him. 5:30 in the morning, he comes.
The same day.
Same day. He trips that camera, and it sends me a picture. I'm like, all right, now's my time to go in. I'm going to go try to get a look at this deer. So I decide I'm going to use my saddle. I'm going to get close to the edge of this field. I go in. I get set up, and about 4 o'clock, quarter after 4, somewhere in there, I see a bunch of white flags coming at me, and my truck is on like the opposite side of where this wind's coming at them. So I'm like, well, maybe they picked up my truck, you know, maybe they're running away from my truck.
Mm-hmm.
So this deer, and he's in the group, like I pulled my nox up. I can see it's him coming at me.
Yeah.
So I pull him up. I can see it's him, and he beds down like 80 yards right in front of me. I'm like,
I've shot deer at 80 yards.
They're running with their flags up, and then he just plops down, like flag up to sitting down right in front of me. Never
That's
seen
bizarre.
Anything like it. It's kind of weird. So I'm like, all right, it wasn't the truck.
Kind of goes back to a couple episodes ago with Clint and you guys, security and bedding.
Yeah.
They know it works for them, so maybe thought.
This farm is wicked thick. It's really good bedding, so
he beds down in front of me, and then I look down, and here's the coyote. So I'm like, all right, now I know what's going on. So this coyote's coming in. He's coming under me. I'm like, this deer by then had gotten back up and was kind of moving back into the thicker stuff. I'm like, I should probably shoot this damn coyote so he's not messing me up.
But, right.
So out of my saddle, I'm kind of inexperienced when it comes to shooting off my weak side. So I'm right-handed, so I'm pulling back kind of on my right side, and it's tough. I'm shooting almost 70 pounds, and I get it back to – I'm like an inch back from my draw, and I'm trying and trying, and it finally locks in, mm-hmm. and the coyote catches that when I lock in.
Oh, the jolt.
Yep. So he catches it, and he backs out, and he goes right back the same way he came from. So I had every intention of shooting that coyote, mm-hmm. but it just didn't happen.
Like anyone would.
Yeah. And so I'm like, well – he's the buck's not alert because I can still see out of the group of five or six deer. I can still see off in the distance. I can see him milling around.
Mm-hmm.
So I wait. It's getting. I'm echoing now.
Yeah, Clint, we got an echo on your end, brother.
We good?
Yeah, we're good.
All right. So.
Better? Yeah, we're good for now. We'll see how it ends up.
So the little doe that I'm assuming is the one that's hot, she comes out to feed. And right behind her is this deer. And it's getting really dark. I've got maybe 5 to 10 minutes of shooting light left. And it's a cloudy day anyways. The wind's blowing 20-some miles an hour. And I just know that it's going to be kind of crappy tacticam footage if I do get a shot at him.
Yeah.
Well, she goes out to feed. And to my surprise, he kind of breaks away from her. And he's walking back towards me. And he starts hitting a scrape. And he hit that scrape. And after he hit that one, he come to me, and I didn't know it at the time, but right down on the edge of the field, 25 yards from me, there's a scrape right there that he had been hitting. And he come in, and he's like a beeline right for me. And he walks right up to that scrape, and he's working that scrape, got his antlers up in it, putting his scent on it. And
December 28th.
Yep. And I had a shot through a bunch of thick stuff, and I'm like, well, I can take the shot, or he's probably going to go back towards the doe after he works this scrape. So I took a shot, launched it through the thick stuff, and hit him high, spined him basically. I don't know if I let the shot off a little high or I hit something or what, but for whatever reason, I hit him high. So I had to climb back down, put another arrow in him to finish him. But I did get tacticam footage of it. It's pretty cool. I'll have to show you that sometime.
Yeah.
But it's kind of dark and grainy, but you can tell it's him. It's pretty wicked. But
that's awesome, man.
Yeah.
He's an awesome 8-point, man. We're all about the big eights.
Yep.
Big eight with the split brow.
Yep, 19-inch spread. Not real tall tines, 9 inches basically on twos and threes all the way around. 24.
His threes look bigger than that.
Yeah, right at 9 5/8 was his tallest tine. 24-inch beams, 5 1/8 bases, big
good
bases.
Good beams, good bases.
Yeah, when I looked at him, I'm like, I passed several 4-year-old bucks, and this deer to me looks like a 5-year-old deer. So whether he was 4 or 5, I can't say for sure. Never had any prior history being my first year hunting my new farm. But
my rule of thumb, generally, from my experience in measuring a lot of whitetails, I wouldn't even know how to guess how many whitetails I've measured, 1,000 of them. And that's, a lot of them are probably non-gun kills, too, because when I first started, I measured everything I could measure. To have a deer with a big frame, like where you're like, whoa, it's a good buck, 24-inch
mm-hmm.
beams and up is where that point starts.
Yep.
There's some deer that'll trick you that have just under 24-inch beams that you think they're that big. And, you know, I've seen deer that have 20-inch beams still look big. I've seen deer in that mid-range between 20 and 24 that still look big. 24 generally is that number that makes a deer like, whoa, shooter.
Yep.
It beams is where it's at because that's what's giving him its shape.
Right.
You know, or, you know, his frame.
His base.
Yeah. Yep.
His base.
You want to call it.
The foundation.
Foundation.
It
yes.
out. But,
He was good enough. He ended up going like 146, 147, somewhere in there as an 8-pointer. That's good enough for me, especially with the season I've had. You know, that other than that drop tine deer, this is the best deer that I've got to see. So
yeah,
I was very pleased to be able to put a tag on him.
He's a stud, man. Congrats.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'm glad you got him here. We'll get some photos of him on the studio table. Put him on the Working Class Bowhunter gram tonight.
Nice.
So you brought up saddle hunting. Greg, one of our buddies and a listener from Tethered, saddle hunting. Saddle hunting is a type of thing where, and we're late in this episode, but I do want to touch on it. It's when I first saw it online, I think Cameron was like, yep. I kind of knew about it, but I never looked into it. And Cameron is like, me and Cameron work together. And Cameron one day is like, hey, check out this video on YouTube. This is saddle hunting. And I'm watching. I'm like, oh, yeah, I've seen this. But I never, like, researched it.
Yeah.
So then we started really diving into the research of it. And I'm like, man, it's awesome. Like, it would be super effective, but I have, like, a ton of concerns about it. It kind of seems like a bunch of nerds, really. Just like,
yeah.
I said this before, and
it's kind of a trendy thing right now. There's a lot of guys getting into it, and
but people shit on it hard at the same time. Because yeah. I posted that video of me in my yard in the saddle, farting around with it, and I got messages like, that thing looks stupid. It's like, well,
I'm not a real dumb it looks, but I'm not a real trendy person. I don't get into trends, but when I seen guys doing this, and I got to talk to a couple of our friends that have been saddle hunting for years, and they're like, I look up to these guys. They're serious big deer yeah. killers, and they said it will literally change the way you hunt these big deer. So I had to try one, and I've been very impressed. I really like how quiet it is. You don't have to carry a stand-in with
yeah.
you. I literally carry everything that I need to hunt. It's going to sound gay, but I bring a little fanny pack in with
hey,
me.
Hey, fanny packs are convenient.
I throw in 10 or 12 pegs, my bow rope, a saw, and a bow hanger, and I go in. I wear the saddle in. It's super light, super quiet, and I really do. I really like it.
I say it's got to be the lightest setup you have.
It is, for sure.
So what... I talked to Greg, and I knew they were doing this tethered saddle brand. This was coming out. It was getting launched. They were doing, like, a pre-order deal. I don't know. I wasn't that looking that far into it when they were doing this. Talked to Greg about it, and we're going to try and meet up at ATA and try and get a podcast done. So that'll be coming, hopefully, if schedules align and all that good shit. ATA is busy. But talked to him. He sent us a couple systems, saddle setups, the full shebang. And I've farted around with it in the tree a little. I got to say, I really like the way it feels. And I think I would have hunted out of 1,000 times by now if I still had a buck tag. My plan is this weekend to hunt out of it and try and kill a doe before ATA. I really like it. I think next year it's going to fucking up my hang and bang skills. And if I thought I wasn't all over the place before, I'm going to be in the where I want to be, I'll be there.
Yep.
With no second thoughts about it. Like, oh, I got to move a stand. I got to get a stand. Nope, I'll be in that tree.
Yeah. I logged a lot of hours in it. I bet I spent 30 or 40% of my season in the saddle this year.
Yeah, you were after it. Yep. Clint, have you ever even thought about saddle hunting? What's your kind of thoughts on it?
I've looked at it a little bit. I've never really played with one.
I want to
do something. I mean, now that I'm writing full-time for Peterson's, I know they've – I don't know who, but I know they've got some stuff with paddles going on over there. So I'm sure it's going to be something that, you know, I'm going to get to do a bunch of testing with and play with and whatnot. It would fit into kind of my arsenal because, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, I got a lot of buddies that are like, dude, you can't get a, you know, you can't hunt out of that tree. And I'm like, oh, yeah, with me and my three or four sticks and my little lone wolf assault, we'll get up there. So, I mean, it's been a... You know, I'm notorious for being in trees that I shouldn't be in with stands, so I'm sure this is going to be right up the same alley. I mean, trees yeah. that I shouldn't mm-hmm. really be in that you're going to be in. So,
well, everyone on the podcast right now has the mindset of, like, you don't kill deer consistently being lazy. So
yeah. right.
all of us have the means, like, yeah, you got to hit. If you want to move, you're going to have to put some sort of climbing method to get up.
Well, I was real questionable about it, too, until this late season.
You didn't have an interest, man. Well, I talked to you earlier.
And I didn't, and then I texted you about it. I'm like, dude, I could really use one of these in Burlington because late season, yeah. and like I'm moving around so much and moving stands. I'm like, this is a pain in the ass. I'm like, it'd be awesome yeah. to have.
Well, I feel like we should talk about this a little bit because this brings like the realness and the honesty of it. Because I was talking to Greg about getting a couple setups.
Right.
It's like, Eric, are you interested? And you're like, not really.
I'm like, not really. I'd like to try one, but I'm not really interested. And then this late season, you know, after Austin's success and everything's like so easy to move around. Well, in late season, I've been moving around so much and like I have been going late muzzleloader, so most of the time it's just sitting on the ground, or I'll take a stand with me. I'm like,
to give you credit, like you're also not scared. Like you'll throw a lone wolf up just to hunt out of it one night.
Oh, for sure.
Like you're
and,
that type
and
of
rip
bow
it, and rip it down and take it back to the truck with me.
Yeah,
like, I don't
that's
care.
How you and Doug hunt on the managed property.
Yes,
you guys are.
That's
on.
How we do
yeah,
it.
You'll
all
love
the time.
This, man. So yeah. so yeah. light, so yeah. a lot less effort
look,
than a
look,
stand.
I have the tethered system sitting, and they're not a sponsor. They really are not a sponsor. I'm holding right now in my hands, and I'll drink a beer while I hold it. I have the whole saddle system in the bag, held straight up above my head, and I'm gonna take a drink of beer at the same time. It's small. I bet you it weighs
8 pounds.
Dude, not even. Yeah,
three. Yeah,
feel that. That's the, I have the whole everything. The
you wear it in and you literally feel a regular harness more than you feel that saddle wearing that saddle in.
And it looks funky when you wear it, but.
And with this tethered setup, they have a platform that you can stand on.
I got it, dude. Right? It is okay. Fucking. Dude, it is so badass.
The original tree saddle is what I've been in, and we put 3 pegs in the tree. So you can actually run around that tree 360 degrees, so you feel like a monkey. But then again, if you, so when you get the saddle on, you get up in the tree, you want like maximum 10 inch tree, because that you're going to straddle that tree the whole time you're there.
Yeah.
Okay, so when you relax, you sit in the saddle, and it's just like sitting in a big old fancy diaper, but you sit there and you're completely relaxed, and you can, and but when the deer comes along or you want to reposition,
it's a diaper hammock.
Your feet, you can, you are right there on the pegs or close to, and you can stand up.
And you kind of just push up with your feet.
You can swing around the tree and get in any position you need to. If that buck, which 90% of the time when you think they're going to come to a certain shooting lane, they're not. They're going to come somewhere else. So with the saddle or tethered, you can rotate around that tree any direction you need to go.
Well, and see, and this is where I came in on it, too, when I texted Kurt about it, because I was sitting on the ground late muzzleloader hunting. I was just like, I'm going to go over here. They've been coming out here. I'm like, shit, fuck it. I'm going to go sit on the ground. And sure as shit, those 5 or 6 bucks come right behind me, 10 yards, and I'm kind of doing one of these things, you know, where you turn around and kind of look out of the corner of your eye, and they have no idea I'm there, but there's nothing I can do about it at this point.
Yep.
Until they come out in the field, you know, mm-hmm. And then when they came out in the field, it was obviously too late.
And I would say the biggest thing to worry about if you're gonna hunt out of a saddle would be make sure you have plenty of trees surrounding you before you get up and swing from a tree, because deer can silhouette you just right.
That
now.
Was my so, biggest concern with when I first started looking into it. That and stealth of draw.
Yeah,
was another one. I think from what I don't have a lot of experience in a saddle. But I think the advantage to that comes if you have a small tree, you straddle it a little bit between your legs, and that tucks you tight to the tree. Yep. And if you can get down the push out and draw setup, and if your tree's bigger to where you're not going to straddle it, you can almost sit sideways next to it and kind of use your saddle as the seat and get comfy. And I think there's a lot, but that was my concern, shooting and
drawing.
Drawing and the silhouette of your body being awkwardly hanging off it.
I think it's going to take a lot of time and practice and experience with it to figure out the right way to do it.
Just like hanging a hang on, like what tree do I get into? Like I can tuck in there.
Right. And that's what I was going to say too. This has got to be something you guys are going to add to your arsenal of practice this summer.
Yeah.
Shooting out of a saddle. You know, if you got a tree in your yard.
It's just another, you know what? It's probably not going to be my go-to every time I go to the tree. I would rather hunt out of a lone wolf.
I'll share my saddle with you.
But if you can have that, and, you know, there's going to be times, like we talked earlier in this episode.
Is there a double saddle?
About thermal.
You can sit on my lap, bro.
I got it.
And places that you want to get to that you don't have a set, you know, that's your go-to in your arsenal. So,
right.
You know, and if you've got practice with it over the summer, you know, you're...
And that's my go-to right now is a lone wolf and 3 sticks. You know, just pack it in, put it up, and be done.
We're gonna peg Greg down at ATM. I'm hoping that works out, because I know Austin, you and him are gonna hit it off after your season.
Love to talk to him.
G2 Outdoors is his YouTube channel. Awesome guy. He's a veteran, or if he's not a veteran, he's 100% a military man. Big shout out to him. He was one of the nicest guys
we gotta get him on
to.
For sure.
Yeah, that's gotta happen. He's an awesome guy.
Yeah. And by the way. I'm a bigger guy, and I was in a saddle, and I've listened to a few YouTube videos and stuff, and they say bigger guys, it might not be comfortable. It's a bunch of bullshit.
Well, tethered offers different sizes.
Yeah, it's different sizes, but it doesn't matter. I mean, all it is just a hammock.
It's a hammock.
Yeah.
It's a hunting hammock.
A butt hammock.
And you're still comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was sitting there, and I was swinging 360. I mean, my feet weren't even on the platform. I just was trying it out. Well, damn thing's strong.
Cameron, you're kind of like... I don't take this in offensive.
I'm offended.
He's already offended. You haven't said anything.
But reel me out. Hear me out here. You are a bigger guy, but you carry you're also an active bigger guy.
Yeah.
So you are kind of like the perfect dude to say, like, hey, if you're bigger, like, you hunt out of hang-ons exclusively.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You do.
Yeah, and I don't touch a ladder anymore.
And I talk to a lot of – but you're not, like – you're not sloppy big. That's the thing. That's a different – there's a lot of big guys I know that are like, I'm scared to get in a hang-on. Yep. I'm scared of doing that. And you're the guy that I think – you're kind of like that role model to big guys that are hunting out of hang-ons and doing the hang and bang, the mobile setups, because you just get the stand. If you're big, get the stand you're rated for and work at it.
Yeah.
Because if just anything, one, it's a workout, and two, it's a better way of hunting.
Just get in it. The most, like, bigger guys, it's like, oh, God, it's going to break or whatever. It's like, no, you're just not comfortable. It's sit in the damn thing.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You just got to get comfortable.
Right. It's a 6,000-pound strap. Sit in it.
Yeah.
Steel's not going to crack.
Throw an extra ratchet strap on there. You'll be good.
Yeah.
The cables are rated for 10,000 pounds. Sit in it, Jerry.
I was looking at the saddle. I mean, it's like nylon ropes. I mean,
they're rated to like 5,000 pounds.
Yeah. They're like picking up like skid steers with them, and it's like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
It's
some of the wild edge stands they hung like like a skid steer, or like put an excavator bucket on it.
Shit. No, you're fine. Just try it.
You just got to go for it.
I can't say that I ever felt unsafe in it all the times I've used it.
Yeah.
You know, I saw videos online of guys like purposely trying to fall out of it, and I set it up with our buddy Tyler Ingholm, and we set it up out in my yard, and I had it on, and I'm like, you don't have any like upper, there's no shoulder straps. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, hey, I'm going to try and fall out of this thing, like catch my skull in case it bounces off the ground. And I like leaned back like an idiot. Like I full blown went limp. Leaned back, straddled the trees, threw my legs up. You can't fall out of it.
No.
I tried. I was upside down, like, oh shit, holding on to the bridge, which is a strap that attaches you to the tree. And I'm like, oh, I had to use that to sit myself back up. I was
So it's your safety harness and tree stand all in one unit.
Yep. Yeah, you don't wear your
you wear your lineman's belt up as you're popping your climbing sticks, your pegs in or whatever, and while you're hooked in with your lineman's belt, you put your other strap on and you hook into that, and then you take your lineman's belt off so you're attached to the tree the whole time. Super safe system.
One of my things that I've been worried about, thinking about sitting in a saddle, even in this late season, say we got some cold weather, but going into this season and really cold, you're going to want to dress up pretty thick. So I wondered about being in a saddle with thick clothing on, how that's going to change things too.
Yeah.
So I haven't had any experience at that, but it's a thought in the back of my mind.
Yeah. Like, no, that's a valid concern.
Yeah.
I've wore it with my heaviest stuff and I've got along fine with it.
Really? Okay. Yeah. It's whether guys like the trend or dislike it, it's something to consider.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because I think this next coming season, the 2019 bow season coming into September, October, whenever your bow season starts, guys are going to be hammering the woods with saddles. And if you're
public land,
if you like to be mobile or you're a public land hunter, I would consider it a must.
Yeah.
See, I wasn't against it, but I was like, I'm just not.
You just weren't interested.
I was not interested at all. Now I'm like, okay, this would be something I'm interested in sure now.
Which is fair, because I was there with you. I was.
Right.
It really was. And I think most guys, I put a poll up of that video of me sitting in that saddle. Did you see that in my yard? I put a poll up, would you hunt out of a saddle? And it was more of a no than I expected. Yeah. And I think guys just don't know about it. And
I think too, it's so new. I mean, when tree stands first came out, they had been like,
whoa.
What the hell is this?
If I hadn't talked to two guys that had years of experience in them and got to talk to them about it, I would have been a lot more leery than I was.
Yeah.
Right.
But after talking to those guys, they're like, get one, try it, you're going to love it, and I did.
You know, all of that, everything we said about saddles, I'm not surprised by the
naysays.
Yeah, the naysays and just like the doubt of it or just the Yeah, the naysay is like the best way to put it, because most people, hardcore guys do, but the majority of deer hunters don't even hunt out of hang-ons yet.
Right.
So that's why the idea of a saddle is like,
what?
Whoa. What? You're hunting out of that? Blah, 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 blah. You know, like that. I get it, though. I get it. Like,
well, maybe Ross can answer this better, too, but isn't that kind of the same setup like linemen use?
Yep.
Like on high line stuff?
Very similar. Yeah. Right. I mean, it's basically a lineman's belt, only you got a nice little diaper to sit in.
Right.
it's a hammock. I mean, it's whatever you want to call it. I don't care what you call it, but it's you can actually relax. Where when you're in a lineman's belt climbing up a pole or you're climbing a tree, whatever you're in, even hanging stands. I run a lineman's belt when I'm hanging stands. So it's all legs at that point. And by the time I get down out of the tree, my legs are just hopping.
Well, you know what I'm really scared for? You can relax. Talking about all this, I have one major concern. And man, I hate to bring it up for who I'm concerned about, and I'm a little nervous.
Oh boy.
But I feel really sorry for the deer herd in Ohio, because once Clint dives into this saddle hunt shit, that herd's going to be hurting, man. They're going to have to put him on the fucking D list.
He's like a timber, he'll be a timber samurai.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I run sticks and a lone wolf a lot. I mean, it takes me 5 minutes to run up, hunt, and 5 minutes to come down. And I mean, I hunt a lot of properties where I got a lot of guys that share farms or they hunt. You know, they spend as much time following me around as they do deer hunting. So, I mean, I do a ton of climbing and I do a ton of hanging and banging hunts. And, you know, I mean, it's something that, you know, definitely, after hearing you guys talk more about it, I mean, I'll be honest. I mean, it has not lit a fire for me yet, but I haven't actually got to mess with it. So it's something that, like, in the back of my head, I'm like, yeah, I'd like to piss around with that and try it.
And you probably will this summer coming up. I mean, try it play around the tree, and then like I said, you tuck it in your back pocket and wait for that perfect time, and then you got it. Yep. You got it down.
Any guy that's trying to have a saddle mentioned in a major bow hunting publication is going to get you a system very fast.
Yeah.
That's the way it goes. So let's taper off there. I appreciate all you guys coming in to drop knowledge and just take the time on the weekday like we do. We're all working class. We all have shit to do tomorrow. But first episode of 2019, I think it went well. We did a longer one. We covered a lot. I hope this helped a lot of the guys with the late season depression and the doubt. It's time to refire, because in July you're going to be wishing you were still hunting.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Kick the afterburners on.
Solid, guys.
I'm going to close out with something positive from everyone, but does anybody have anything they want to add? I mean, feel free to dive in if there's something we missed.
No, man, I'm good.
I think we're good.
Yeah.
Clint, close us out with something positive, my friend.
Something positive. 2019, it's now time to start planning all of our hunts for the year ahead. I'm pretty excited about that. I got a baby coming on the way, Keaton William.
Congratulations, by the way.
When's that unit due?
I mean, Danielle, she's ready to pop here any day now. So, I mean, it's supposed to be towards the, you know, towards like that third into fourth week, but I don't think we're going to, I don't think she's going to make it that long. But
You're going to have three boys now, huh?
Yep. We'll have,
your testosterone level must be low, because high testosterone produces girls, I heard.
That's false.
False news. I'm with you, Clint. I got three boys.
No, there it is. No, I think we covered, man, we covered a lot. Just thinking real quick, only thing I would say we didn't cover or didn't touch on, I mean, I know we all do it, but all the listeners should do it. Man, don't forget to shoot those bows and you know, if we ever get some colder weather, man, that alters so much. I mean, it alters draw length. It alters, you know, brace height. I mean,
muscles.
You know, make sure you guys are shooting your bows, and don't forget equipment, tree stands, put canola oil on them, put, you know, non-scented oil. I mean, any creeps, just check your gear out. You know, I mean, every year I hear somebody around my area that was coming to full draw and his rest squeaked at a buck at 15 yards, or his tree stand creaked, or he brushed up against a tree, you know, a rough bark tree with his jacket and it spooked a buck. I mean, just be wary of all that stuff. I mean, we didn't cover it, but just something to
preparation,
you know,
pays off.
Yep.
Yeah,
the,
for sure.
The small details, man. Make sure you're checking your, crossing your T's and dotting your I's.
Well, thanks, Clint, for all the advice, man, coming on the show yet again. You're a listener favorite, man. We appreciate the fuck out of you and appreciate you being on the first show of 2019.
Hell yeah, man. Happy to get hooked up with everybody. I need to get in the studio and,
hey,
yeah, dude.
Come do Iowa Classic in Des Moines first weekend of March with us. I think people would be glad to see you.
For sure.
Hell yeah, man. That'd be a good time.
for sure. Yeah, we need to make that happen.
Eric, what do you got?
Well, I got two more days or this weekend left to try and make something happen here, and we got ATA next week, so
that's right, man.
I got a busy week coming up.
And congrats on the new job.
Yep, we got a new job.
You're back full time on the podcast.
Yeah. I'm cracking beers again, so it's awesome.
I think this is the first podcast I've done with you in about the last four that I've done.
Yeah. Right.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Tank, what do you got, man? Give us all the news, all the announcements, and
not that you hate Christmas
and all the positivity. Yeah,
no,
Christmas out of this, man.
I say I'm happy now. Christmas is over.
Jeez, Scrooge.
Got another little one on the way.
Congrats.
Congrats.
Man, a lot of babies. A lot of babies in 19 lined up.
Just coming at them, man.
Whoa.
It's vulgar. I'm sorry. It was supposed to be funny, but no one thought it was as funny as I thought it would have been.
But no, 2018, it was good to me, and hopefully 2019 is even better.
Apparently our whole crew doesn't know how it works. Biology, that is.
Still learning.
Still learning. Ross, you haven't figured it out yet, man. What's up with you? You got anything positive?
Oh, boy.
God, man, I felt harsh. I'm sorry. That was a joke. It meant to go way...
You suck.
It meant to go over way lighter than it did. So, anyway, Ross, sorry.
We're at the end of the season. I don't know. I still have yet to some big boys showing up. I know they're out there, but... you know, got high hopes somebody will show up. Otherwise,
Papa Dave's high fiving you right now, man. Spiritually, because he's struggling too. I feel bad.
It's it could happen, and maybe it won't, but that's all right. We're gonna grind it out. ATA's coming up. Austin and I are pumped. We're gonna join you guys down there.
Yeah, man. Whole crew's gonna be there.
Yeah. So, gonna be a blast. Just made a solid podcast, Clint Casper. I was fun talking with you.
Hell yeah, my man. Long time overdue.
Yep, that's right. Going into this season, looking forward to picking up some awesome sheds.
It's coming in
real quick. Yeah,
it'll be here before we know it.
Austin and I were talking about that last night.
It's the next thought after ATA, man.
It's coming. So
I found my first shed last year. It was like January 22nd.
Mm.
And it was chewed on already. And it had blood on the base.
I had a little buck come in the other night. Had both sides dropped already.
Oh, don't tell me. Don't tell me.
Start running around.
Austin, give us
something. It's just nice to... I'll finish up. It's just nice to... come off a season with more knowledge and studying the deer and figuring out different ways for the future.
Yeah.
Going into 2019, you set bigger goals and I know what I'm going to do and try different things. So feeling solid.
You never know it all, man. You never know it all. Well, thanks for coming, Ross. Austin, close it out, my brother.
Well, I guess what I would have to say is just thanks to everybody for all the positive vibes I've got to share these two deer with you guys, and got a lot of positive vibes from the WCB family. So
yeah,
really do appreciate it. It was a great season for me, and got a couple that I've been watching that I'm looking forward to seeing next year. So it's going to be fun.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thanks for coming again. Yeah. Like, hey, always love having you guys.
Appreciate it.
I have a couple things that are positive, and I guess I haven't really announced it yet on the podcast. I thought I have, but I just kind of got used to a baseline. Me and Samantha are expecting a baby April 22nd. So it's going to be a little girl, a little bow hunter.
Congratulations, homie.
Congrats, buddy.
And, congrats. Coming quick. That'll be here before you know it.
I thought I had talked about it. We kept it off social media, not because we wanted to hide it, but because we just love the old school way of just telling people in person, which is super refreshing.
I don't think you said anything at all in here, have you?
I haven't. Nope. This is my first time.
Okay, cool.
But yeah, having a little girl, April 22nd, a little mid-turkey season baby. So I'll be taking turkey season off this year, but I'm looking forward to later on getting her started on our birthday type deal. And
for sure.
I'm pumped, man. I really am super stoked about it. You know, every guy wants a boy. But I got that high testosterone, man. So it just girls come out of it.
I've had guys tell me you got to go deeper for girls.
Apparently, I can reach pretty far. But I'm super stoked, man. I'm so pumped to be a dad and just kind of like share my passion with my own product, really. You know, because my wife's into it; she has a bow. I'm just pumped, all about it. I'm so stoked. ATA is coming in hot. Super stoked for that. Meet up with all our friends. Everyone, the whole crew will be there. Ross, Austin will be with us, and Jordan, Tank will be there.
Yep.
We're starting our filming for season two at ATA for at Carbon TV. We got some big episodes planned. A ton of episodes planned, actually. If you're going to be there, we'll be based out of the Rubline Marketing Room. You can find us there. We'll be all over between all the outdoor group booths and Big Time and all our other partners. We'll be bouncing around.
We'll be at ATA somewhere. Just find us.
Yeah, we will be there. Just
a big enough crew. You'll find somebody. Right.
Free Bush Light. And we'll come running. Anyway, thank you all for listening. We appreciate your support through 2018 and into 2019. We're hoping to kill it this year. And just keep it as comfortable as possible. Get you through your work day. We love you. Go shoot your bow.